This is F1 Debrief, mad as a box of ferrets. Coming up this week, we talk tyre testing, memorable moments, and a virgin conspiracy. Hello there.
Off season, baby!
Yeah, it's busier than the on season, though.
What's going on?
I don't know. It's been a couple of weeks since we did a podcast, and since then we've just been putting up guest posts right, left and centre.
All sorts going on. Side Podcast is the only F1 website in the world whose traffic increases when the season's finished. News
and views. At the end of the last show, if you remember, I know it was a couple of weeks ago, we were saying that we're not going to be following the off-season testing as closely as we did last time. I said, there's no way I'm doing that young driver, who are they anyway post, looking into who they all are, all these new names. Then I went and did it.
You lied to us. That's what happened.
And then I went and made a post for every single day of testing as well.
That's called under-promising and over-delivering.
I think it might be.
Did you get a bit carried away with the concept of testing? What happened?
Well, I thought it was actually really useful to look at who all these new names were, because quite a lot of last year's came to be household names, if you will.
Yes. I would be amazed if the same happened this year, because there were one or two pay testers.
Just one or two.
Yes. Names that really had no rhyme nor reason for being in a young driver test.
No.
And therefore, you may not see so much of them. I do believe seats were for sale, and therefore the places were filled by people who were willing to put up the money to take part.
Yeah, it wasn't as constructive as it might have been in the past. So those 2 days were a bit rubbish. And the next 2 days were all about the new tyres. But I think that was also rubbish too, because they were testing the tyres so they were slower than the previous test, which is always disappointing when cars go slower than they did before.
Right.
And they were testing the tyres on 2010 cars when they are designed for 2011 cars. So
yes,
they're never going to work.
No, but the tyre company needed some information. And I think we saw there were a few drivers who didn't bother to take part in the test or weren't allowed to take part in the test. I think McLaren couldn't be bothered to send their race drivers out to see what the tyres would do, because they're going to change so much before January, February testing begins. And
it's not really an advantage.
It was a tyre test specifically for the tyre company. It was unusual because they were coming into the sport and they had to be sure that they were on the right track. I imagine it was quite a fraught time for Pirelli, because it was their first real test. In the past, they've had one driver, their test driver, running on their tyres on a modified Toyota chassis, I think. It was the first time that they got to see if what they were doing was correct. And by all accounts, it seemed to be on the right track.
They did a pretty good job. Ferrari were fastest on both days, which doesn't really mean anything, but for them to be fastest on both days means they were obviously plugged right in there.
Mm-hmm.
Vettel had a puncture on both days.
Yes.
Seems odd.
You wouldn't have him down as a driver who's particularly hard on his tyres, but it does look like at least one of those incidents was down to debris, and possibly both were. So if he was just that unlucky, maybe he did more laps, or he was taking a different line and picking up lots of rubbish. But
he used up all his luck in the race.
That's what it was. And then he had the tyre failures.
Yeah.
That's what happened there. To me, neither test, I mean, you can tell by the end of it, I think, if you were following the website, we got bored. Our interest tailed off.
I think there were zero comments on the last day.
Yeah, on the final day of testing, we were like, forget it. The issue, obviously, for us was, I think it started at 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock in the morning, because it was in Bahrain, which is never useful. So I wasn't that, I think I was actually staying up late.
We were running shifts, really.
Yes. I stayed up late. I saw the beginning of the testing because I hadn't gone to bed yet.
Yeah,
but then
I
missed a great chunk of it in the day. That you know, if you're desperate for track action, I guess it was nice to follow, but we didn't really learn that much.
There's been a little bit of driver movement, or, well, not really movement. Williams confirmed that Rubens will be back for them next season, and it's going to be his 19th year in F1.
Wonderful.
That's an awful lot.
Yes. That man is a product of the testing regulations, isn't he? His experience is so valuable right now with the lack of testing in season that Williams really need to make the most of him while they can.
Lukey, his number one fan, wrote a great post on gridwalktalk.wordpress.com all about how, you know, it's good that he's there. Everyone loves Rubens, don't they?
Yes, you can't fault the guy. He's perfect for Williams, and it's great to see that he's still in Formula 1. I just dislike the fact that there is no in-season testing for us to follow, because I really liked it. I like going to in-season testing. I don't blame Rubens for that. he's making the most of the rules.
He is. Williams also confirmed that Nico Hülkenberg won't be back. Apparently they couldn't come to an agreement, whatever that means.
I'm not sure that door has completely closed.
Do you think?
It's not an avenue. Well, they didn't announce Maldonado.
No.
So they can't be that convinced, can they?
Those rumours haven't gone away, but they haven't confirmed him yet either.
If it was the end of Hulk, then I'm pretty sure it would have been a dual driver announcement, and that didn't happen. So it's very odd.
I felt like it was the end of Hulk, though, to an extent. That sounds like we're killing him off.
Right.
But, I mean, you don't announce he's not coming back and then go, actually, yeah, we'll have him back.
Well, that's
why would you bother? Why wouldn't you just say, yeah, Rubens is staying on, and then not say anything about the second driver? Why would you say for sure he's not coming back?
Interesting point. I think, didn't Nico jump the gun and announce that he wouldn't be there next year first?
He did, yeah.
And then Williams had to scramble around and pull up a press release.
I think they sort of tagged it on at the same time, and then Rubens' good news to balance out.
Interesting. Don't know what's going on there. Time will tell.
Also in driver news, Daniel Ricciardo, who actually led both of the driver young driver test days.
Which was expected. Yeah. He was in the fastest
car.
He
was in the Red Bull. He also dominated it last year as well. So basically, if there's a young driver test, it's Disco Dan that
He's
leads
the
way.
Yeah. I miss Disco Dan. We need more of him this year.
Yes.
Next year. What year is it?
Some year.
Next year.
Well, he is going to be the reserve driver for Toro Rosso, and he'll get a chance to drive on Fridays, again, with this testing ban. Franz Tost, the boss of Toro Rosso, he said, jokingly, apparently, that having Disco Dan there means that the two drivers will have to be on their toes and they'll have to behave themselves.
I'm not sure he was joking so much.
No.
It does sound like that's exactly what the Toro Rosso are trying to do, because let's think about it. Toro Rosso don't care about bringing on new drivers particularly. I mean, they are the Red Bull B team, and they know that if they find a decent driver, he's just going to be shipped off to Red Bull as soon as possible. So it's not in Toro Rosso's interest to bring Disco Dan. Can I call him Disco Dan?
Is that right? I am.
That is official name. To bring Disco Dan into the team, they're going to run him on Fridays, which means it's going to put the two current race drivers under pressure. And I'm not too sure he was joking. I think he was quite serious there. I don't know which, whose flavour of the month is Toro Rosso?
Well,
must be Alguersuari, right?
I think so, because there were a couple of stories on Autosport. And first, Franz Tost was saying, oh, Alguersuari do really well. It's good. We haven't given him the car, but I know next year he's going to do better. He's used this year to learn and to grow. No mention of Buemi at all. And then the next story was not about either driver, but just that they know they've got a lot of hard work over the winter to provide a decent car.
Remind me.
No Buemi there either.
Remind me. Because I have recollections of something almost identical happening this time last year. And that was Toro Rosso signed Buemi, but forgot to sign Alguersuari. And Alguersuari was maintaining the whole time he had a contract, and he would definitely be on that seat. And Toro Rosso refused to mention him at all in any form of communication.
This is true.
And eventually the guy was signed, and he did well. And obviously he did better than his teammate, because suddenly it's Buemi who's the name who shall not be mentioned.
He who shall not be named.
Mm.
Well, I think it's weird that Disco Dan has been signed to Toro Rosso when it's always felt like he seems to fit with Red Bull better.
Yes.
Toro Rosso has always seemed like really young drivers that you've never heard of, whereas Disco Dan, I mean, they have him on the Red Bull podcast all the time.
I didn't know that.
And it seems like he would be straight into the big team.
Do the big team, putting you on the spot here,
uh-oh,
because I cannot for the life of me remember, do the big team have a third driver?
Well, there was Brendan Hartley, but I don't think he did it for very long. He didn't have his license or wasn't allowed or something.
He still does the Red Bull simulator work, though. He's still
okay
on the scene.
Well, I know DC did it for a bit when he had to cover for someone.
Mm.
Maybe Disco Dan is actually the test driver for both teams at the moment, or was this year, and that's why he's on the podcast. That would make sense.
Yes, that's a good deduction. Is this a promotion?
I don't know. Because it means he gets to run on a Friday, but is he solely with Toro Rosso or is he still for both? Oh, it's very confusing.
You've opened up more questions than you've answered with this podcast already. Well done, Christy.
Internal politics.
People come here for answers.
Well,
you don't know the answers.
They shouldn't come here for answers.
Just speculation. Okay, so that's what we're thinking. So it's a demotion, but he gets to run on Fridays,
but,
and Red Bull will not risk. Actually, I'm surprised. Put my cynical hat firmly back
on
my head. I'm surprised that they didn't decide to replace Webber with Ricciardo on Fridays this year.
But that's interesting because it is a demotion of sorts. But then does that also mean that Red Bull is sort of opening up another role? Because if they're splitting the test drivers into two.
Yes.
Whereas they used to only have one for both.
One to cover both. Yes. Good question.
So maybe they're putting a little bit more budget in.
More questions. Tell me for the next section, you have more answers than you do have questions.
Well, I don't think this section has any answers or questions, so that'll be good.
Okay, go on.
I just wanted to mention the LG moment of the year. So this is another thing that I've spotted.
Go up.
Yeah, on Autosport, on the sidebar, another thing for you to vote on, but it's a bit weird.
Go on.
They have a moment from every single race of the year, so 19 moments to choose from, and you get to vote once a day, every day, until I think it's the 2nd of December.
Okay.
So there's not that long to go now. Some of the moments make sense. Like, I voted today for Fireman Hakey.
Excellent.
I'm not going to vote every day.
Love that moment.
Yeah.
Is there another word for that? I guess it's like an event, a moment in time. Love that in Singapore.
Yeah. I'm not going to vote every day. I just happened to be in there. But some of them, you can see that was a good moment. Some of them are weird. Like, for Silverstone, they've just got the fact that Button and Hamilton spoke to the fans.
They turned up.
Yeah.
Yay for being British at your home Grand Prix.
It's weird.
I don't understand that either. I did notice the Hockenheim thing. For Hockenheim, obviously, was the Ferrari switch around.
Well, for their moment, the way they've put it is, at Hockenheim, Ferrari got a 1-2. Yay.
Now, to me, being me, and taking my cynical hat clean off.
Oh, really? Blimey.
The moment
happen very often.
The moment, probably of the year, if I think about it, was Rob's radio message to Felipe as he entered the pits at the end of the race. And that was the quote, that was very magnanimous. You won't know what that means, but I shall
explain it
to you later. That has to be a moment of the year. Not the fact that Ferrari screwed over the fans.
Which is the worst moment of the year.
Yeah, I mean, who's going to vote for that? That's a terrible idea. The problem I have with this LG thing is it's much like a certain other ranking system in that it's incredibly corporate. And I get the impression from the people who've been tweeting it that many within the paddock have been asked, quote unquote, to promote this. There's a lot of insistence from people who, I wouldn't say they've been paid to do it, but they're certainly being asked. Someone's being asked by LG
nudged.
To promote this. Yes, nudged in the right direction. Give us a bit of a plug on this. And the moments are, apart from the hiking moment, I think the rest of the moments are very corporate.
Yeah.
Which is
a shame. Other things like Kobayashi, when he suddenly started overtaking everyone.
Well, that's a good moment.
Whenever that was.
That'll get my vote.
And Petrov doing well and finishing high up.
Mm.
But they don't seem like specific moments. That's just sort of, that's what happened in the race. Well,
yes.
Done.
Yes.
Are we voting for a race of the year?
You'd imagine, well, that's another good question. I mean, you'd imagine there should be specific passes or, I mean, Button's tire call in Australia. Is that there? That was a great moment in racing. That was a highlight of the year. Winning two races before his teammate, who we all assumed would win, would own him this year, would be a great moment.
So if you're saying to me that it's a bit like Christine's rankings.
Yes.
It's
not like Christine's rankings. It should be more like Christine's rankings. We need more Timo Glock DJing.
Yeah.
That's what it's missing.
That's your moment of the year.
Mm.
So really we need to do a Christine's moment of the year.
Oh, can we do that?
Or a side podcast.
No, I think we should do a Christine. That's a great idea. Can you pick your favourite?
And get people to vote on them.
Yes, non-corporate moments that the paddock would be unlikely to suggest. And like the Rob message, what else? There must be some other things.
Oh,
like
I'm sure we can come up with something.
Maybe in the comments, if you're listening to this show, dive in the comments and tell us what your favourite moment of the year is, and we'll collect a proper moment of the year, and not just two British drivers wave at the British fans at the British Grand Prix, because that's rubbish!
The final bit of news was just, we wanted to clarify that Five
I
Live.
I was wrong.
Five Live are
miles off.
Are advertising for Holly Samos' position. So you were miles off in terms of the merging the commentary teams together.
There is going to be no merging. It makes sense to me. I don't understand. I've never understood. Nothing. Forget it. Fine. So
you were wrong.
Five Live are looking for the next Holly Samos. And there's a link. We'll put a link in the show notes to it. If you can be Ted Mark II, Ted's buddy in the pit lane, if that job is for you, then you definitely need to apply.
They do say they're not looking for the next Holly. They're looking for the next you.
Oh, that's fantastic. Really.
You're looking for the next Ted.
There is never going to be another Ted. But to be honest with you, if they've got any sense, they'll be looking for the next Holly because she was better than Lee. Feedback.
While we're talking about TED, a while ago, actually it was during the Korean Grand Prix weekend, so that was somewhere in October, Connor Fearon tweeted us and said, I don't know if you noticed, but Ledyard said TED News during Q2, and he said he prefers our jingle. And Connor went on to send me a little clip of Ledyard doing his thing. Do you want to hear it?
I'd love to hear that.
Oh, the race, of course, where they got to start if you get into Q3 on the tyres that you set your fastest qualifying time if you're part of the top 10. TED News. Yeah, what we're hearing...
He's missing something in that commentary box. He needs to do it with more, like, jazz hands.
There's no jingle singers or anything.
Yeah, TED News. That's just...
He sounds a bit panicked, to be honest. It's not quite the instructive... introduction you'd want.
Do we actually have any TED News?
There is no TED News, no. TED must be on holiday.
Anybody would think it was the off-season.
We have had a lot of feedback
over
the last couple of weeks, so I'm just going to get started. Mark B. contacted us via the form on the About page.
Flypodcast.com/about.
Yeah. He says, hello, Christine and Mr. C. I am a diehard F1 fan over here in the USA. I just came across Side Podcast at the start of this season, so I, of course, was saddened when you went on break, but I can fully understand why, as I'm sure the site is a lot of hard work. It has been great hearing you bring back the debriefs, and I look forward to each one. I've also thoroughly enjoyed the Aside with Joe podcast. I have listened to everyone, and because of it, started subscribing to Grand Prix Plus.
Good man.
I've listened to other podcasts on F1, but yours is the best and most enjoyable. One question, where exactly am I able to view the archives of the Fact Bite Fact Boxes from the races? I'm unable to find them on your site. Due to the timing of the races, I typically watch them over here in the US on PVR, so I don't get to see your live comments and the Fact Box, but I would love to take a look at an archive if it exists. Thank you for all you do. Cheers, Mark B.
That's a fine question. And had you prepped me before this show with this email, I could have...
I do like to trick you.
Yeah, I could have found a solution, but there isn't one. So, in short, sidepodcast.com/category/...
Highlights. At the moment, they're all in the highlights category because they are highlights of each race.
But that isn't...
You can also find it under the drop-down, the more link. Menu. There's all the categories are there, so you can just click on highlights.
That's
there.
Actually quite good. That is quite good. So, okay, go to the homepage. There's a navigation bar right the way across the top. The last one says more. You click the more chip. And it drops down, and in there you've got highlights. That's actually pretty straightforward. I was trying to think of a better way to get there. What we really need, there is a sidepodcast.com/factbitefactbox page, but all that shows at the moment is the countdown and live updates. But what you really want is an archive at the base of that page.
List of links or something.
Listing them all, which I will do. I'll make that for Mark, because that's a very good question. So in the future, by the time this show comes out, or maybe later this week at least, you'll be able to go to sidepodcast.com/factbitefactbox and find a list of all of the recent ones. And we'll do that.
And thanks to Mark for pointing it out.
Great suggestion. Good question.
Next up, also via the contact form, this is quite a long message from Bill Georges. And I was actually going to do this one as a guest post, but he did mention some things about Red Bull. And by the time we got round to it, that had all been decided. Vettel was the champion, so it didn't quite make sense. But I thought I could read them out here. I'm sure you don't mind listening to me.
I am sitting comfortably.
It's in response to some things we've been talking about on the show. Bill says, hi, folks. I listen to side podcasts pretty regularly when they come out. I'm usually on an elliptical when I get to listen. I do have some input on the latest, but first, a little background. I've been a lifelong F1 fan, starting with reading Rob Walker on a regular basis in Road and Track. Rob brought F1 alive for me, and I grew up reading, thinking, and imagining what it was like in the 70s to be a part of F1. Several years ago, I was in Nice for a set of meetings for my business, and I drove as much of the F1 circuit as I could in a Peugeot diesel minivan. When I spoke with my wife that evening, she thought I was insane. It was awesome. I am a sports car guy, having owned a number of Porsches and still hold a club racing license. In fact, I'm currently building a Porsche 944 spec car to race in the Porsche Club of America Club Racing Series. All of this to say that I have some basis for my thoughts below. Sounds like more of an expert than we are.
I'm actually quite excited by the 944. A friend of mine used to have one and occasionally let me drive it.
Goodness.
With or without a license, I can't remember.
Let's not go into that too much then. On the subject of blue flags, Fernandez and Branson have suggested we need to do away with blue flags. This is absolutely nuts. Blue flags have been used from near the beginning of racing to provide information to drivers. Backmarkers are backmarkers, and the stewards need to let them know when they're about to be overtaken. I also think the level of expectation regarding the drivers in F1 is interesting. These guys are the best in the business. They can adjust front wings, mixture, brake bias, cover F-ducts on a lap, but they have issues watching their mirrors and or dealing with blue flags. Really?
Fair point.
Blue flags are there for a purpose, and I'm sorry the slow guys see them. Drive faster and develop a faster car. As a last thought, no one would actually suggest doing away with the yellow flags, would they?
All good points, but I do genuinely think that next year it will be a less of an issue. I'm sure that the backmarkers will move forward or disappear completely. So in theory, it's all a storm in a team cup. I don't quite know why Branson and Fernandez went out of their way to complain about blue flags, unless they just felt like their voices weren't being heard and they wanted to agree with each other.
They just felt a bit picked on.
Maybe that's what it was, which is fair enough. I mean, look at Bernie Eccleston. He had a go at them, said that some of them wouldn't see the season out. And they did. They got there. They proved him wrong. So maybe it was just a case, you know, they wanted their voices to be heard and they wanted people to debate it.
It's unusual that the teams agree on things like that as well. So they must have at least meant it at the time. I don't know how they feel about it now. The other topic Bill mentions is the safety car restart thing that we get very confused about, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
He said, on the last side podcast I listened to, it was suggested or asked how to manage restarts, especially when backmarkers stand between the front runners involved in a WDC chase. How about this easy solution? One, no tyre warming until the lights are out on the safety car. It's useless if the safety car is going to be out for an additional 3 laps anyway. Two, allow cars with 45 seconds of the leader to pass all backmarkers and close on the leaders. Or three, allow cars that are a lap down to pass the safety car and catch up at the back of the pack. I think the NASCAR guys call this the lucky dog rule. Or some combination of both. This can be solved. It's actually a pretty simple issue. The FIA just needs to make a stand. I agree, the current rule set is rubbish, as the Brits would say.
Or one Brit would say. I think the tyre warming is important, actually, because there were times this year when, was it Vettel was told to warm up his right front as opposed to his left front because they were becoming imbalanced and therefore he had to be more aggressive on one side than the other. So I think that has to remain. So one point on safety reasons, point one cannot be allowed to happen. Regarding point two and three, actually the best suggestion I think we've heard on this was I think from Alison in the comments, who said, well, just the lap before the safety car comes in, why don't all of the backmarkers head down the pit lane? And the time it takes them to trundle down the pit lane,
they would be at the back anyway.
They would be at the back anyway. And I couldn't find a flaw with that. And as yet, nobody has come up with a decent explanation as why that couldn't happen.
Yeah.
All of them just peel off and they're not allowed to stop. It's just like a drive-through for them. And they just miraculously end up at the back of the pack as they filter out. And the timing should basically work out roughly so things are all correct.
That all makes sense.
That's the best example I've got. So as much as I appreciate the ideas that Bill put forward, I actually think that's the better one.
Mm. Well, it's very interesting. And thanks, Bill, for your ideas. We like to get lots of feedback because we're rubbish at coming up with ideas.
Absolutely. We merely pose questions.
That's right.
Apparently.
No answers from us.
All the questions, none of the answers. Welcome to Side Podcast.
Next up, Riley has a little bit of a complaint.
Oh, blimey.
He says, hi, I absolutely love Side Podcast and the information received from it, especially with Joe. There is, however, one small complaint. Can you get your guests to stop whining about how expensive being involved in F1 is? I'm pretty sure that half the world dreams of being involved in F1. If these guys really have that much of a problem making ends meet, let me know what size shoes they wear. I'll fill them. Once again, good show. Keep it going.
I'm assuming that was to Joe and Beneep, who both voiced similar concerns.
I believe so. But it really is quite expensive.
It is very expensive. I don't really know how to answer that. I would guess no, because that's what they feel. And if it costs that much money.
The interesting thing is they're both, Joe and Manib are both on completely different ends of the spectrum. Like Joe has been in it forever. He knows everyone and, you know, has lots of contacts and goes to every race and everything.
Yes.
Whereas Manib hasn't been to every race and is brand new in the paddock and is trying to make his way in there. And if they both have the same view,
yes,
then obviously something is wrong, isn't it?
I would say this to Riley, because I can't argue against it, particularly because I'm not really the one who has to pay these bills. But if you really want to fill Joe's shoes or Nisha's shoes, then there is nothing stopping you. You don't need an invite to do this. No one is going to come along and say, well, actually, I find it a bit expensive. Why don't you come and have a go yourself? There is nothing stopping you from getting a blog, from starting a podcast, from having a go and seeing what it's like and whether or not it's the kind of thing you might be interested in doing, because blogging is free. It costs no money to start a blog, and then you will get a feel of whether or not it's the kind of thing that's for you. And if it is, you can then take it further. There is room for more Formula One journalists. There really are. I mean, it's becoming a dying art in some cases. And if you really feel that, you know, they should quit complaining and you'd really think you could do a better job and complain less, get out there and do it.
Do it. Next up, Jason sent us a message via Facebook.
Okay.
He said, just found Side Podcast a few weeks ago, finished listening to your Australia review show. That was quite a while ago. There was a comment on how stupid the designer of Virgin's fuel tank was and that it should have been acknowledged as early as December of last year. That's just the gist. I do not know if you have covered this topic, but I'd like to know your thoughts. For a new team to present their car design, I assume prior to testing, they made an obvious mistake. Was there any other changes they made between what was first presented and the final design, something like four races into the season? Is it possible that Virgin wanted to see if there were design elements from other teams that could be used on their first or second design? They made a mistake that the FIA obviously had to allow them to fix or face ridicule about allowing the team to enter F1 that could not finish a race. If you've covered this thought, can you tell me which podcast it can be found? Regards, Jason. This is the podcast. That is quite a complicated question, though. We did say we don't have answers.
Okay, so first thing, the biggest question here is, can you remember what you've talked about? And then remember when you talked about it?
Well, I think...
Give me a break, Jason!
Basically, what he's saying is that, is it possible that Virgin deliberately fixed their car wrong so that they would have time to look at what the other teams were doing, and then the FIA would have to allow them to change it, because obviously if they can't get to the end of the race, that's embarrassing. They might be able to incorporate some other designs in the change they were allowed to do.
So, no, I think that's it. Well, I'll tell you what, I would be proud of that conspiracy theory. I wish I'd have come up with that.
Yeah.
That's a good one. But I don't think that would be the case, because I think the team are operating different from any other Formula One team. If Ferrari had done this, I would be behind this 100%.
You'd be clapping and cheering.
They have a budget that's big enough to do exactly that. And they would have sorted out their problem with their F-duct. I don't know if Virgin brought on board an F-duct as a result of the chassis change. I'm not too sure on that, buddy, that point. And I'm not... So I couldn't say that they really benefited in that way. Also, they have a fixed budget, and it ate into that budget. And because there is no more money coming in, they had to cut elsewhere.
Yeah, I think because it was a bit embarrassing when they started arguing about who was going to pay for it and stuff. And I think if they had pre-planned it, that wouldn't have come out, would it?
No, absolutely not. I mean, Nick, I don't think it was an argument, but Nick Worth put his hand up and said, yeah, we screwed up and we've got to pay for it. And no, I don't. It would be a great conspiracy theory if that was true, but there just isn't the budget. They're too small a team. They got it wrong because they didn't have the experience. If you look at Lotus, they had Mike Gascoigne. Mike Gascoigne knows how these things work. If you look at HRT, they went to Dallara know exactly how these things work. You go to Virgin and it was a new concept. They're trying CFD for the first time. They had more things to worry about. They just got it wrong. They messed it up. I would assume it was down to the Cosworth being more greedy when it came to fuel consumption than maybe they
took. A miscalculation.
Yeah, the tolerance wasn't in there and it just used more fuel for a race than they really thought it should do.
Actually, on that subject, you know, we do Friday Fun. It's a bit of fun on
off-season?
A Friday, yeah. As you can imagine.
I'm not sure that needed any further explanation.
I just wanted to clarify. This week, it was basically you had to sell things in your team. Mm. So it was like classified ads for things.
Okay.
And we had
inventive ways to sell Formula One.
Bits and pieces.
Right.
We had things from gloves to helmets to
drivers.
Drivers, yeah, to cars, all kinds of things. And Virgin Racing actually took part in that with a tweet from their official Twitter guy, who basically wanted to try and sell their car.
Go on, what was his tweet? I should say in advance, this is easily one of my top 10 tweets of the year.
It says, for sale, early VR01, lightweight SWB, low fuel qualifying Monaco version, never wind tunnel tested, ideal hill climb or sprint. They want to get rid of that chassis.
Short wheelbase Monaco version. Love it.
Finally, another Jason, and this time we are back via the contact form. He says, "Hi, Sidepodders. Today I stumbled on Stefan GP's website, which now shows traces of actual web design. I didn't think they'd still be around, but they even have a countdown to 2011.
Who doesn't?
Even though no entries have been granted. More interestingly, their background picture is the only picture I've ever seen of the 2010 Toyota car, which looks pretty unimpressive, like a low-budget Ferrari or something. They also have some stuff on there about building a whole Stefan technology park and an F1-level racetrack outside of Belgrade. Even better, they have a picture of a ferret wearing a We Want SGP shirt in their breaking news section. And they have a total of one friend on Facebook. Can we show them some side pod love?" And that's from Jason Miller.
First things first, there are pictures of the Toyota 2010 car because Race Car Engineering did a special on it. We'll put a link in the show notes, but there is a magazine out there which shows you not only the outside of the Toyota, but also the inner workings and various things about it. I don't think Stefan have the only pictures. Secondly, do we ever think that Stefan GP will make it into Formula One?
I think we'd all love it if they did. They're completely crazy.
Mad as a box of ferrets,
yeah.
That team. That would be immense. That would be an absolute highlight of Formula One if they ever did. Yeah. I'm not convinced they will.
They may not be good at interacting with people if they've only got one friend on Facebook. That's not a good start, is it?
Yeah, you got to feel sorry for them for that. I'm wondering if the one friend is not Jason, he being the only person. That is a great find. We can fix that. We can show some Sidepod love to Stefan GP because that's quite sad, having one friend. Everyone needs more than one friend. So we'll fix that, definitely. Thank you, Jason.
Housekeeping. Just a couple of things to plug this week. We had our first ever Spanish column.
How exciting.
Yeah.
Went down very well, I think.
Yeah. The lovely Amanda, who's been writing a daily post for us each week for a while, decided she wanted to do another post each
week. She's keen.
Yeah. And she's taken on the idea of keeping us up to date with the Spanish drivers, what mm-hmm. they're doing. Also sport in Spain generally. So there's a bit of football talk and tennis and things like that. Plus a handy little reference guide to some words you'll need if you are going to talk about motorsport in Spain.
Perfect. And I tell you what I love more than the concept of the post is the fact that Amanda has a column. And I really like the idea of people having their own columns on Side Podcast.
Yes.
That's such a great idea. Regular. I mean, it's going to help me tell which day of the week I'm in.
Yeah.
Because is it Wednesday? Spanish Wednesday.
Yes.
So I'll always know where we are. And it's a great help.
So
and
you also want like a German Tuesday.
If we could have more countries on other days, then I'd never forget where we are.
Well, that's good.
Useful. Yeah. But no, I genuinely do like people having columns. I think it's a great thing. And I love self-publishers too, because, I mean, obviously Amanda's got the ability to write and publish on the site. And that makes our life so much easier.
Yeah. Well, we're letting more and more people self-publish. Mm. So if you have anything you want to say.
Did Stephen self-publish his Thursday Thoughts this week? That was a surprise. I really like just browsing. You know, I'm on the site, I'm in the comments, and suddenly a post pops up and it didn't come from you and it didn't come from me. And it's just like magically appears. What? How excellent is that? I'm so happy when that happens.
You're very sweet. Another guest publisher who doesn't have self-publishing rights yet, but I'm going to work on that because I think he intends to come back again and again. Adam posted an excellent season review.
Yes, he did.
He had a look at some things like the FIA decisions.
Yep. It was his post actually that reminded me that Bernie was mean to the small teams, as I mentioned earlier.
Well,
was Bernie who said they wouldn't make it to the end of the year, and I'd forgot that, but it was thanks to...
It was all there in Adam's post.
Absolutely.
And he's come back. We just published it today, actually, being Sunday. It's the first in a new series from him of tracks that mean something to him. So he's just having a look at them, explaining why they mean something to him and how good they are.
And this is a column? Is it a regular column or an irregular column?
I don't know if it's going to be regular or not. I know that he has a series of them in mind.
Right.
But good. I don't know the publishing schedule. I haven't asked him.
Fantastic. I love people. I just love people.
You do. And finally, while we're talking about season reviews, you must send in your season reviews to us.
I'm disappointed.
Yeah.
I've actually had very many. Slightly gutted.
I thought you just said you loved people.
I do love people. I love, what's the word for it? Self-motivated people. I don't love the people we have to keep badgering over and over and over and over again.
Well, you know, we asked for the season review in audio, so either via our voicemail, 01212887225, or MP3s emailed to me, christine@sidepodcast.com.
And?
Season reviews... you know, how 2010 treated you and your thoughts on it. And so far we've had maybe four voicemails and one email. And that is not
good. Lackluster.
Well, last year we had 9 and the year before we had 8. So I was hoping for 10. Double figures.
Yes.
I actually thought we might be able to break through that, but we've only got 5 so far.
It's a slow start.
It is a slow start. Now, we've got, you know, maybe a week or so left because I need to have time to put them together before the year actually ends.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess if we don't get enough, we won't be able to do it, but I'm sure we will.
The thing with season reviews is that everybody must have an opinion on them.
Yeah, it's been a whole year's work.
You can't possibly have been watching any Formula One this year and not have any opinion on it whatsoever. How can that happen? I know that everybody out there listening to the show can take part in this.
Even if it's only a sentence or
it
two.
It only has to be a sentence. Just tell us. Even if you just rang us up, picked up the phone and said, I quite liked it. That's fine.
Yeah.
That's all we ask. It's really not that difficult to do. There are people out there writing regular columns on a weekly basis with no input from us whatsoever. Surely you can just pick up the phone. Pick up the phone.
Oh dear. It's like it's all gone a bit telethon.
Yes. I'm stunned at the ambivalence shown for the annual season review. I'm quite gutted by the whole thing.
Well, yeah, I mean, the last 2 years have been really good, but we can only make what the people send us. So
a very, very short season review.
It will be short, yes.
Pick up the phone.
But remember, you love people.
I do love people. They are brilliant.
There you go. You're happy again now.
Yeah, I'm fine, really.
That was a quick rant.
You just reminded me that, you know, it was less inspiring than possibly it should have been. Or it's harder than it should have been. That's all.
We should have done that the other way around. Ended on a high note, really. I've planned
that
wrong.
How long have you been doing this?
I know.
Good Lord. Okay, well then, that's it. We're just going to end on a low. We'll just say goodbye.
No. You love people.
Yeah, people are brilliant. Thank you for listening. Thank you for tuning in. We'll be back again. This isn't the last show of the year. We will return. And do join us then. Thank you for everything. Thank you for your feedback. Appreciate the feedback. Sidepodcast.com/about for more. If you have any more thoughts, that's supposed to go, send them in. We'll read them out during the next show. And as ever, do keep your comments coming. Do keep your guest posts coming and your voicemails, which I know you're dying to send in now. 01212887225. You're already on the phone. I can hear you. I can hear you dialing. So we'll say goodbye.